Blog Talk Radio. Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone. Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Saubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and we've just come from an invigorating basketball tournament here on the South Side at Prosser Elementary School. And one of the things that we observe in our youth is that when they are playing sports, they tend to have a different attitude than when they are idle or even in the classroom if there is a sense of failure that they feel. We find that on the basketball court or the baseball field or the football field or tennis court, wherever they may be, where they are enjoying interaction and competition and even some of the things that challenge them, such as having to lose. But the fun is in the game. And the idea is that if we can engage our children in activities where they can enjoy each other's company, have a sense of achievement, and develop a brotherhood and sisterhood, probably end much of the stress and conflict that is occurring on our streets today. So we're going to talk a bit about that process of transforming the lives of young people. Definitely, this is on the minds of so many who are troubled with the ongoing conflict
among youth, the ongoing fear and the belief that our young people are simply becoming the enemy. Well, that's not true. And if we understand that what they really want is just to feel loved, then we can provide those environments in which they are, in fact, being nurtured and encouraged and given direction and a sense of purpose. So why are we not putting in more time in the development of our young people in ways enjoyable to be a child? Well, we're going to talk about that. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. Press 1 when you're ready to speak. And you'll be able to join us live on the Female Solution Facebook page, of course. As always, we appreciate those who join us live and call in to comment, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak so that we can, include you in this conversation. I'm Naima Latif, and we'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us.
We all say we would like to be wealthy, but wealth isn't determined by how much money you have. Wealth is determined by your power to define what money is. The dictionary defines money as something used as a way to pay for goods and services and to pay people for their work. So how would you like to have access to an unlimited source of money? Money that is not taxed by the government. Money that increases as you share the opportunity with others. Money that you can use to pay for goods and services and pay people for their work. I'm talking about Bitcoin. It's the future of independent wealth building. Bitcoin is the new money that you control. Get started building your wealth. Call 312-849-3456. That's 312-849-3456. We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. And we have just come from a wonderful championship game, the Bulldogs versus the Tigers. And this is elementary school basketball. However, one of the things that the coach, Pastor Sheldon Little, spoke about was that he teaches the young people brotherhood. Now, we want to talk a bit today about what we're teaching our young people and what we need to change in terms of how we teach them about the differences of those that they encounter. We've had years and years of indoctrination of racial division, differences because of color of skin or side of town you live on. We've had differences that we have made up basically that don't really exist, but more or less we have had people who have taught their children that if someone is different than you, then they're not to be trusted or to even be disliked and picked on. We've taught this to our children, and we teach it in many subtle ways, even in what we teach in our classrooms. When we teach history or geography or civics, we always teach that somebody is the enemy. And how do we teach about war? Whoever won the war, of course, is the one that tells the story. But we have not had the courage to teach our children that we've made mistakes and we should not have been fighting each other and we were wrong and there is no winner in war. Instead, we create a story of some people being victors over others and conquering others and heroes because they killed more people. Are we willing to admit that what we taught and what we have been teaching is wrong? Are we willing to teach brotherhood? Are we willing to allow our young people to learn that everybody is equal, the same, worthy of respect, and just as capable of achieving excellence as anyone else? Now, the question is, can our athletic programs provide this kind of platform for teaching friendly competition, shaking hands after you finish, congratulating the other team for making you work hard and work your best, and honoring them, much in the way we see martial arts where the two opponents will bow to each other before and after the match, giving respect for the fact that this is someone who has inspired you and motivated you to strive for excellence. And therefore, even if you win, you still give honor to your opponent. Can we teach those kinds of principles in our sports program? And can we in our classrooms, as we teach about countries that fight other countries, can we straight out teach that this is wrong? And what needs to happen is that we need to learn how to settle our differences through talking and not fighting and killing. Are we willing to admit that we as adults have been wrong in the way we have treated each other? Are we willing to admit that we should develop better communication skills and better listening skills and respect those that are different? What do you think about changing the way we teach in school so that not only are we admitting that there are things we did wrong, we're even changing the way we have students
competing with each other. And rather than competing in the classroom and making the one feel bad that perhaps didn't get the lesson, what if we taught cooperation the same way we teach cooperation on a sports team? And we help each other. We pass the ball. We cheer when someone scores a point and gets a right answer. How about we change the way, teach them about life? And not that some people might take something from you and therefore you have to beat them and you have to look at someone across the world or across the street even as an enemy, but that we're all in this together. Can we teach that as a principle of living? And how do we admit that what we used to teach was wrong? Well, we want you to give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak. If you're on our switchboard now and you have been teaching perhaps a different set of principles than what is normally taught in our school systems, we want you to press 1 and say how you teach differently. What's in history, what is being taught, how we're people who really straight up murdered a lot of people, are heroes. And can we now teach that they were just misguided in terms of what is valuable? They didn't know any better. Great conquerors that we applaud for their violence and we called heroes and call them great. Can we change what we say about what they have done? Can we even change the word? And what word do you think should be used other than conquered someone? Perhaps we need to stop saying that. Perhaps what we need to do is use the language and express what really happened. Massive numbers of people were slaughtered, and this was a horrible thing, this act of war, and we should never do this again. And so instead of calling certain things victories, calling it unfortunate that we were not able to resolve this difference in a way that was peaceful. So if that's the case, what do you suggest we begin teaching about, say, something like the Civil War? Now, we've had a lot of controversy, whereas the Civil War heroes, many of the statues from the South have been taken down, and the Southerners are upset about that. They feel like this is our Southern pride. We don't think it's right that they should be taken down or that they should not be given their just accolades. They fought and won, and they were heroes. So why should we not have statues of them? And then, of course, the winner of the war, the North, they say, well, no, we don't want to do that. We don't want to call them heroes when, in fact, they were fighting to maintain slavery. That's not something that we value. So many of those who have been upset that the Southern heroes of the Civil War have no longer been allowed to be displayed as heroes, and the Confederate flag is not encouraged to be flown because it's seen as a racist symbol, they are still feeling like it's not fair. They want their side to feel that there was some glory in it for them. Well, of course, if you've seen that movie, Glory, it was very interesting the way the black soldiers were finally allowed to fight for their freedom, and yet were still denigrated. So we have a long way to go. But what we want to do is consider how we're teaching the next generation of children. How are we teaching them when it comes to values and respect for each other. And in the arena of sports, we often see admiration for one's opponent when good sportsmanship is taught. And we see a camaraderie among the players, and it becomes like a family. And they learn that it's best for everyone to do their best because they all win as a team. And so this kind of them to feel what we call oneness. We are all one. We are all part of the same family of humanity. And so we're all connected and we all want the best for each other. In the sports arena, this is easily taught. In the classroom, not so much so. Because what happens is when one person excels, the other ones get resentful and bullying happens. Because we're not teaching that the class is a team and that we all want to win and we should help each other. Can we change that? Can we change how we structure our classrooms so we're not trying to see how many passed, how many failed? We're trying to make everyone be excellent, just like we want everybody team to be excellent. We want, on a basketball team, you want everybody to be good at dribbling. You want everybody to be able to pass a good pass. We want everybody to be able to shoot and hit the basket and be accurate in their aim. We want everybody to have good skills. And so we work together. We don't try to make one person do all the work and everybody else feel like they're inadequate. We want everybody to be excellent. Can we do the same thing in our classrooms? Because if we did that, number one, we would raise the self-esteem of all of the children. So rather than school being this very hurtful, harsh place where you're always in fear of humiliation, it would be just as enjoyable as a sports team. When you came to school and you read that paragraph out loud, and your teammates cheered because you got every word right, or they encouraged you if you stumbled over a word, and you felt good because you felt like people are pulling for you, that would change the character of our children. Rather than them being angry at the, say, the so-called smart children and calling them bad names, nerd, goofy, and all these mean-spirited things based on jealousy of not being able to excel academically, rather than doing that, rather than labeling some people as slow or dummy and making them feel bad and then therefore them needing to get self-esteem in other ways, such as beating up other children, what if we changed what we did in the classroom so that it was like a team and children were encouraged and helped and the intention wasn't for the teacher to see who they could fail, but to reward students for displaying good sportsmanship, good teamsmanship, helping each other. If we have a test and this one person can't remember the answers, encouraging them, not making them feel bad like they're a failure. What if there was no failure? We watched the game today, and there were many times, and these are children, you know, elementary school children. They missed a lot of shots. But what you heard from the stands was, good try. Can't we do that? Can't we do that in the classroom? Where even if you miss a point, good try. Good guess. Help him out. Can we do that? Are we willing to do something different in the way we educate? What do you suggest? Because right now, when we look at what our children are doing across the nation, they're frustrated at school, they're angry, they're being cruel to each other, and so children are going to school armed, afraid they're going to get shot. That's appalling. trying to get to school because one group wants to run the streets. They want to feel powerful. Why? Because they feel so disempowered everywhere else in their lives. They have no sense of being in control of what happens to them and constantly in the state of being humiliated everywhere they go and being treated badly and talked to badly by adults, teased by their peers that they don't have enough money to dress well, hungry if their parents don't have enough money to buy food, ashamed if they don't have good clothing to wear in the wintertime, cold if their coat isn't adequate. So the anger that they feel at being in an environment where there is no teamwork, there is no sense of family, there is no encouragement, they're angry and they hurt people because they are hurt on the inside. It's not rocket science to try to figure out why our children are violent. They have not been given love. And what does love look like? Love is not beating. Love is not insulting. Love is not humiliating. Love is encouraging. Love is giving a sense of purpose and a belief that one can achieve because one is given support. That's what love looks like. So if I come from a home where my parent is struggling and maybe the parents were not able to stay together and work together, and maybe we don't have a lot of things, but if I have neighbors who step in and maybe somebody can take me to school because the other parent doesn't have a car or has to leave for work, what if we had other people step in and help me with my homework if our parent has to work late and can't be there when we get home? What if we worked together as a family so that nobody was struggling and feeling alone? What if everybody received help? What if everybody felt like part of a team? My block is the team that looks out for me. The street where I live is the team that encourages me when I'm on my way to school and coming home from school. My block is the team that helps my mother or my father when they need work done around the house and maybe don't quite have enough to pay for that broken window or that sagging gutter. My block is my team that backs me up. Why can't we be that way? If we were, we would not have violence. We would not have angry youth. We would not have angry adults. We would not have people killing if we formed a team. This is the answer. Not more police trying to kill people because they're out here afraid of all the armed people that are carrying guns because the gun manufacturers need a market to sell their arms, and we don't have enough wars for them to make the kind of profits they need to make. So they need to make a profit off of the anger and frustration of neglected youth. We don't need that because that's what that is. Too insane to stop the flow of guns, even when someone walks into a classroom and kills a classroom full of kindergartners and first graders, children. Too focused on getting paid money. So since we can't get the adults who should be responsible to be responsible, let us who understand be responsible. Let's remove the desire to harm from the hearts of those that are hurting because they don't have a team to cheer for them. They don't have a team to encourage them. They don't have a team to show them. Let's go out and form teams block by block, classroom by classroom. Let's form a team in that classroom so instead of the children coming to school in fear that they're going to be ridiculed by other students and teachers, they'll come and they know they're going to hear applause. They're going to hear cheers. They're going to hear encouragement. They're going to hear, good try. This is what has to happen. And when this happens, we'll have champions in life. Every part of life, we'll have champions. We'll have champions corporations, in our businesses. We'll have champions in our companies and our organizations. We'll have champions because people will feel like part of a team that's winning. And every business that has ever excelled, they've used that principle of encouragement, team building, rewards, cheering, acknowledgement, support. Every successful company has done that. Now, I hate to talk about our postal service, but there is a term called going postal. People flip out and come in and just shoot up the place because they snapped. And it's happened a lot at the post office. And it's a place, unfortunately, where the idea of a team has not been built. But instead, we've had stress. People threatened with firing for any mistake. People under pressure. People exhausted. People not listened to. People fearful that they're going to lose their jobs and lose their homes and lose their families. People working under stress and feeling that they're not supported. And so one day, they snap and go off on the management and supervision and maybe even some employees. Why is that happening? Why is that happening? And it's not just the post office, but it's happened so often at the post office that the term going postal has been created to designate what happens in a work environment when the employees just snap. They've had enough. There was someone on Facebook, I believe, from Walmart, happened to see the post. One of the employees got on the intercom and basically cussed out the management. And at the end of her speech, she said, "I quit." And she talked about how they were rude to the workers and insensitive. And workers having to face rude customers and not get support from the management, and how they were not paid much and always working under stress. And she cussed them out pretty bad. And at the end of her speech, over the loudspeaker, mind you, she said, "I quit." Now, what happened? And she explained why she was angry. What happened in a company when those in management don't have respect for those that they have hired, and they're only thinking about the profit that I need to make and the work I need to get done, and they're acting like a slave driver, where you don't have any sense of dignity and honor and being respected in a workplace because the ownership is so focused on their bottom line and what they got to produce, and they don't know how to motivate using positive motivation. Like a good coach knows how to use positive motivation. So they push employees to the limit, and then someone snaps. Unfortunately, a few years ago, we covered a news story in Aurora, our TV show, the Media Connection, which is a news affair show, and we try to show the good news, but sometimes the news isn't good. Well, this was a story about a man who'd come into work one day and shut up the management, a couple of employees, and everybody was horrified, but his mother said she knew that he was under stress. She didn't know that was going to happen, but she felt bad, of course. Well, it's one of those situations. Somebody was under stress, being threatened possibly with firing, not being counseled or said, "Well, look, you're not doing well. Are you going through something in your personal life? How can we help you? How can we support you? How can we encourage you? Do you need a few days off? Do you need to take some mental health days? You know, we want to help you be your best." That didn't happen. Instead, he was under stress of being fired. And, of course, being fired means you can lose your place to stay, you can lose your transportation, you can even lose your family if they see you as a failure. It can be very distressing. So what happens when someone who is maybe performing badly on a job, maybe they got a drug problem, maybe they got a drinking problem, they're in pain, they're trying to self-medicate. Rather than us say you're fired, why, if we hired them in the first place, we had to have hired them for a reason. They had to have had some good quality. So if they're going through something difficult, why not call them in and say, how can we help you? We see that you're going through something. We love you. We care about you. Not, if you don't get yourself in order, we're going to boot you out of here. Why not use a different method? Instead of hurting someone who's already hurt, why not show them compassion, kindness, concern, care, love? And so rather than a person always being threatened with losing a job and losing their livelihood and losing everything they have and being out on the street, why don't we show them love and support? Why don't we be a good team captain or a good coach or a good teammate and help them when they're having trouble? Why can't we do that? We can do that. Why haven't we done that? Because we haven't had the right value. And the right value reflects the thought that everyone is important. Every life matters. Everyone to be excellent. We don't want to have some better than others. No one's better than anybody. We want people to be their best. And we want to help them be that way. And so rather than us trying to hurt people or have some people suffer while other people have more than their share, we want everyone to succeed, not at the expense of someone else, not to try to outshine someone else, but because that's who they are. They are excellent, and we want them to shine. Can we change how we think? Can we change how we raise our children? Can we change the environment in which they're raised in so that the environment is supportive and encouraging and emotionally healthy for them and not always putting them in a state of mind where they're looking to be harmed emotionally or even physically? Can we change how we think? Well, we want you to give us your thoughts. Would that work? And what would it take to change those who are in control of those decisions? The teachers, the principals, the superintendents in our schools. What would it take to change their thinking to realize what they're doing doesn't work? And if we did things differently, we could have champions in every part of life. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back. If you're on our switchboard, press one. We want to hear from you. Can we really change the ethics, the values, the principles that we teach so that everyone is part team and everyone is supported and everyone is valuable and everyone is loved? How do we do that? Give us a call, 515-605-9325. Press 1 if you're ready to speak. And if you're on our switchboard now, we want to hear from you. 515-605-9325. Press 1 if you're on our switchboard. We want your thoughts. We'll be right back in a moment, so stay with us.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is the result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Oh, man. God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456. And schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and we're outside of Prosser Elementary School. We've just had a wonderful time at the championship basketball tournament, and this has really been an opportunity to see what happens when young people, given the opportunity to form a team, form a group, form a family, and see themselves as a team, to see themselves as someone who belongs. You know, when young people join gangs, that's really why. A sense of protection, sense of status, someone to teach them survival skills, somebody who has their back, somebody who's family, somebody who will stand up for them, even to the point of risking their own life. So being a part of something that makes you feel strong, especially if you've been made to feel weak or abandoned, or even made to feel bad, like you're a reject or you're not welcome in a society, it's understandable why the growth of gangs have occurred in so many cities and even in rural areas. You know, it's not just an urban thing just because there's more people, but, you know, when people feel powerless, negative structures, when there's a sense of hopelessness, and people do destructive things when they can't do constructive things. So when we see the violence that occurs and people get angry and next thing you know there are riots and people are breaking out windows and stealing things, where does that energy come from? Now, those who don't know any better
have said, well, these children aren't getting enough spankings. They need more beatings. They need to bring back school, corporal punishment. Really? Really? So with that erroneous thought, we have over the last several days really been addressing that thought, because it's a thought that is incorrect based on our faulty analysis of history. We're not seeing that that treatment of human beings does not result in peace. It results in more violent human beings. People who are raised with hatred and resentment and contempt, they learn to perpetrate that on others. And they often find a scapegoat to do that. That's what bullying is. I've been made to feel weak, so I'm going to make you feel weak because I can bully you, and then I'll feel better about myself. I'll feel less weak and powerless. That's where that comes from. So when you have an environment where people are made to feel shame or made to feel as if they are unworthy of respect, so they do destructive things trying to get respect. I mean, how many of us have situations where someone kills somebody because you stepped on my shoes, you bumped into me? What's in the mind and heart of someone who is so easily made to feel disrespected and feeling like they have to defend some honor that they believe was lost by someone accidentally stepping on their shoes? That's a reflection of a lifetime of being made to feel unworthy. And so the things that they do to try to recapture that feeling of worthiness are destructive things, hurtful things, things that certainly don't reflect someone who values life because their life wasn't valued. And as a result of their life not being valued, they don't value others. There have been instances of youth killing, young people killing young people. And it's been reported widely on the news here in Chicago, and certainly Chicago's not the only city where this is happening. But it's such a horrific thing to hear 12-year-olds being shot by 15-year-olds, and everybody's a juvenile. And everybody's looking, who do you blame? And then people want to blame the mayor. Well, the mayor would do her job. She didn't raise these people. She's not on the block with them. She doesn't live where they live. That's not her fault. Well, she needs to have more police. Well, we got police. We got plenty of police. And then when the police come out and arrest somebody who's 12, then everybody's up in arms. Oh, he's just a child. But did you notice this child becoming murderous because of their constantly being inflicted with pain, emotional pain, of nothingness? Just because we mask the neglect with throwing games at them, video games and other electronics, it's still neglect because it isn't time spent. The way you spend time when you engage them in activities. So many people look at important as not as important as academics. But where do you teach the ethics and values of unity and cooperation and family? It's not being taught in the classroom where they're memorizing useless information, made to feel like if they don't memorize it, then they're not going to be allowed to have a decent life because they're not going to be admitted to higher education or training or employment opportunities. So where are they going to learn values of other people's lives mattering? And we're all in this together. We're all on the same team. We all care about each other. We all want to win. We all want each other to win. Where are they going to be taught that? And when are we going to change our classroom so that our classroom can reflect that philosophy? Not I'm going to frighten you because I'm going to make you feel like a failure because I've already been taught that your kind aren't smart anyway. And I'm not picking on teachers. But we have to look at how we have taught the teachers. And if we have not taught them how to see the value in people, it's our fault. We've taught them to stereotype. We've taught them to put children in categories. We've taught them to divide up their classroom so that the ones who learn faster can be put in one section and the ones who learn differently or learn slower can be put in another section and made them feel bad. We taught teachers to do that. We didn't teach teachers to say, look, pair your smarter children up with the ones who are having trouble so that they're a team and they're encouraging each other. We haven't taught them that. We taught them, grade your teachers, and you should probably expect a bell curve. You know, you're going to have the middle of the, you know, that bell curve, you know, the one end where the smart children are, and then it goes up in the middle where the average people are, and then down again where the less than average people are. And that's usually the average people somewhere in the middle. So the ones who are on the smart end, well, you know, they're the few, and then the ones that are on the dumb end, they're the other end. And then the ones who are about average, they're in the middle. And that's how it is. Why can't they all be excellent? Very interesting post that I saw this morning about Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison. Of course, you know Thomas Edison, the inventor of the light bulb and so many other inventions. Well, as a little boy, the story goes, he came home from school one day with a note from his teacher, and the teacher told him, look, don't give this note to anybody but your mother. And it was sealed up so he didn't see what it said. So his mother opened up the note, and her tears came to her eyes. And she said, she, you know, supposedly read the note to her son, Edison, Thomas Edison, and said, your son is a genius. We don't have good enough teachers to be able to teach him because he's so advanced. So you're going to have to teach him at home from now on. And that's what happened. From then on, he was homeschooled. Well, years later, story goes, that after Thomas Edison had been, you know, great inventor, known all over the world, a genius and everything, he was, and his mother had passed away, and he was cleaning out some of the things in the house, and he found this letter in the corner of the drawer, folded up, and it was the old letter from his teacher. And he opened it up, and the letter actually said, your son is addled, mentally ill. He doesn't have the intelligence to keep up in school. We can't do anything with him. You're going to have to keep him home. We can't teach him here anymore. That's exactly what the letter said. And, of course, he read that, and he cried and cried and cried. And he said, I'm an adult, you know, mentally ill man raised by a champion mother. And so I became a genius. Something like that. You know, the whole moral of the story is you become what you told you are. And because his mother made him believe it, the school said he was so smart, just such a genius, they just didn't have the teachers for him. Because he believed that about himself, that's what he became. And his mother, she taught him reading and writing and everything at home. And he believed that about himself, and that is what he became. So if we would stop telling our so-called average children they're just average, if we would stop telling our struggling children that they can't learn, if we would stop isolating the ones who are excelling and making them feel like they're so separate from everybody else that they can either look down on everybody else or fear being bullied because people are jealous, if we would stop doing that in our classroom, we would stop creating people who are self-hating and violent
We really can stop the violence. We have to stop doing the thing that we've been doing that doesn't work. We have to be intelligent enough and have enough humility to admit we've been wrong. It's intelligent to be able to say, I was wrong. When we look back on history and we see people who have been violent, we see people who have hurt people, we see people who have committed mass murder in the name of war, why can't we just say, we made a mistake? We were wrong. We didn't know how to talk to each other. We should have learned how to listen to each other's needs and wants and desires and help. We should have been a family. We should have been a team. We should have worked together. We didn't have the right understanding back then, and we're going to do better now. Instead of saying, oh, we won that war. We killed all of them, and we killed their children and their children's children, and we won, and we took over the land. We were champions. We're winners. We're victors. We won. It's the stupidest thing. There are no winners in war. When you go to war, everyone has lost. You have lost. You have lost the knowledge of who you are. An expression of God is who you are. That's who you are. And God is creative energy. Love energy. Excellence. Magnificence. Power used for good. Not pain and hurt and damage. We have forgotten who we are when we resort to war, when we hurt others, when we kill others, when we applaud others for hurting. Let me go to our phone line and take a call before we take another break. 773-957 Grand Rising. Thank you for calling us on this Saturday afternoon. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your comments.
Grand Rising. This is Rashida. I'm from Chicago.
All right. So you've been in the schools, Rashida. You've been in some of the schools where there are homeless children and children living in the worst conditions, probably failing a lot because they don't have a lot of support. This different method of teaching can actually change the way some of them might feel about themselves and even change their situation so that people are more helpful and rather than condemning them, can actually lift them up. What do you think about that?
Well, working with the homeless students and at the Harold Washington School, I discovered that 80% of the children there were homeless. So what I did starting to help is I started myself to organize parent councils. And from listening to you, I was thinking that would be a good approach if we could, like we have gym and work study groups in school, to have conflict resolution class for all the students, and to get them in that conflict resolution. You know, you play or gym and having all teams participate, please support teams to participate.
Your sound is going out a little bit. Rashida, is there a way you can fix your sound? It's kind of going in and out, and I want our viewers to be able to hear you as well.
Okay.
You think they should? Oh, that's better, yes. So you say that they should have conflict resolution classes?
Yeah, like as part of the curricula, like gym, work study, every student had the opportunity to participate monthly or weekly, however they design it, in conflict resolution, including the support group that they have outside, a member of that group, a parent or someone of the family or the community, to participate at least once a month in the involvement of the curriculum for conflict resolution. I think that should be done because it's not actually being done in the homes. Children are witnessing the parents attacking each other. I'm in transition right now myself for a wrong fiction, so I'm in the community. And the other day, a mother stabbed her boyfriend, and the child witnessed it. And the child is an excellent student. So from that observation, I thought about exactly what you're talking about. In spite of my dilemma, I was thinking, how would I feel if I was a boy child and my mother was in transition with her boyfriend and I was with a family member and I witnessed my mother take the blood out of my stepfather or stepmother or whatever in the home. So what you were saying about teens, Mr. Plump said something to me. He said teen means together each and every one achieve more. And if we start just at the elementary level, teaching conflict resolution as part of the curricula, and then having someone, a member of each and every one of the members in the school to participate in that resolve, to resolve conflict, because most of us are spurred by emotions and anger and hate that create, like you said, other crime. So if we could just start at every school level, from kindergarten on up, having a curricula where there's involvement with outside of the school and the development and participation of conflict resolution programs, because it's really getting worse and worse and worse. All these anxieties from the pandemic and other pressures is creating a lot of more crime, especially among those who are impoverished. That's my opinion anyway, from my observation.
Well, I think, and I really think that needs to be part of the curriculum, conflict resolution. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Rashida, I'm going to come back to you. And, of course, if you're on our switchboard and you want to make a comment, press 1. You all open your mic as well. But I want to ask you, how do you think those conflict resolution classes should be done? Should they, you know, have an outside counselor or, you know, a professional? Or should it even involve parents? Because sometimes, like the child you were speaking of, sometimes parents are the ones in conflict. And they need to learn how to resolve their conflicts because the child has to come to school after seeing the violence between them. So we're going to come back and talk about that. How can we introduce conflict resolution and even help a child whose family might be in conflict? We'll be right back. So stay with us.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant. Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of our cells, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. If you want to join us live on Facebook, just go to facebook.com/The Female Solution and you'll see my face right here. We're outside of Proctor Elementary School. We had a wonderful time at a basketball team, and it's one of the things that really touched our hearts to see that the young men said the reason why they won the game, they're such champions because they are brothers. They're like a family, and the coach, our coach, of course, his team just literally blew the other team out of the water. But the good thing about it is that there was a good sportsmanship, and coach, which Pastor Sheldon Little, who also on Sundays speaks to a flock of people, is active in the community and active in the school that this team represented, and said he's like a father figure. So we're talking today about how we can support those who are maybe feeling like they don't have any family. They don't have anybody who cares. They don't have a team. And we've got on the line with us, our live line, Rashida from Chicago, always the activist and advocate for those who have been economically deprived and even abused and neglected. So Rashida, and the work that you did with the schools that you've worked with, and you've seen some of these young people that are coming out of violent homes, do you think parents would be willing to participate in some of these conflict resolution sessions if the child's able to say, look, my mother and father had a fight last night, or, you know, my mother and her boyfriend and my father and his girlfriend, or, you know, my grandmother and my brother had a fight, and, you know, my brother got stabbed. I mean, you know, because students, they see that stuff. Do you think there's a way that we could help their families with conflict resolution? What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think with the school council that they have now, the parent council, it can be part of the requirement, you know, that the parent participate or one of the family members or support group that's within the family participate in the conflict resolution at least once a month, once every month, and have it as part of the school, like they used to have gym, but adding, including the family, you know. They don't have truant officers and social workers that reach out anymore, but they do have parent councils at every school now. And if members in the community could attend those meetings that are interested in having some resolve with the conflict that's creating a lot of violence in our community, if the members of the council could reach out into the community, or when they have their group meetings, I don't know whether they still do because it's been a few years since I've volunteered, but doing organizing within the school, I was able to organize a team, and we developed councils, parent councils, where the members of the council would observe and create programs that could motivate the students. So that would be motivational if the council could come to a point where they could get programs that could develop into conflict resolution, where the parent or whoever the guardian is of the student has mandated through the council meetings to participate either during the regular curricula that they design, or just the monthly parent council meeting. So that's what I was thinking. Being a volunteer, I saw that in the kindergarten, where our kindergartners were hypertensive and all of that, and the teachers would leave, the principals would leave because they saw no resolve. So I just came up with a plan where I would group with the teachers, you know, agreement, the students that were problems and causing distractions and hitting and spitting on other students. I designed a group, you know, and then they all participate in the curricula that the teacher had designed for that day, and as a group. And there was no getting out the seat and pulling hair and kicking and running around the classrooms anymore. And then they also found out that the children were exposed right there in the school, but the parents didn't know, because they sent them to school for the breakfast. They didn't know that the little babies were playing in the walls that had a hole in the school and eating and not washing their hands. And they had to develop lead poisoning. So they were hyper. They didn't know why the children were acting so wild. So just from observation and development, we were able to rid that problem. Even the behaviors were modified just by grouping and giving them the attention that they needed, so they would be motivated to even learn more. There was no more hitting and spitting and running around the class while the teacher was trying to teach the other children. So it's just common sense and caring. That's what I thought, because the little children became like part of my family, you know. And I saw what the need was. And so I think the same thing can happen when it comes to the council's development programs that could sort of take an approach to resolving conflict, because there's a lot of it in the home. Even if the student is an excellent student, when they come home, they see that aggression, that violence, that tension, especially if the parents are homeless. So that's where the stress lies, you know, and it's a lot of that in our neighborhood. We just don't see them like do downtown or Jewtown sleeping on the street, but it's a lot of that. And it's stress, so, and it's pain, and a lot of other things.
So tell me, if a student is homeless, are there signs that a teacher should see? You know, a lot of times they might live in a shelter, but I know sometimes some shelters, after a certain age, they don't allow the students to live there. So that means you have a lot of high school students that are actually homeless because the shelters for families won't allow a teenager in the shelter. So what signs should a teacher look for that a student might be homeless or living with a homeless family or, you know, even living by themselves homeless? What things should they look for?
Well, what I saw with the kindergartners was the behavior, aggressive behavior, and then their apparel, you know. One of the students, I asked, why do you wear you're old enough to put your clothes on, why do you wear your clothes backwards, you know? One day it's right, and next day you got the tag hanging out. And she said, well, my mother can't wash, and I just turned it on the other side to her. You can see it in their apparel sometimes. And then you can see when they need extra attention. That's why they're distracting the class, because they want that attention. And one of the little kindergartens, I said, why are you acting like that? And I don't like to see you always in the corner. What happened? And he said, well, last night the police came in our house and broke in our house, and my mother and my father went to jail. So honestly, I mean, these things, the teachers have their curricula. All they focus on is what they have to teach. But when it comes to the behaviors, they give them punishment or some type of detention, but that's not helping. You have to get to the root of the problem, and you can tell it if they have any kind of concern with the behavior. You know, the actions of the child, and it's not that the child is mentally, you know, off balance and can't heal, but it's something they're exposed to that's making them, you know, react that way. And most times it's at home. So all the mother students, thanks to God, they excel. Even the one that was in eighth grade, and I got an award from Luke Love, but he was 2 points something.
Wow.
And he come to class, and the teacher had him sitting in the back of the classroom. He would always be trying to get attention. And so I said, why you don't acknowledge him when he raised his hand? And she said, well, he's 2 point something, and we're in eighth grade, and I just don't have time to focus on him. So I said, could you just give me everything that you teach the other students, and let me, it was a classroom in the back, and let me take him back here and teach him what you're teaching or have planned to teach and the homework. And she said, well, for whatever good it might.
Wow.
God, at the end of the school year, the testing period, he went from 2 points something to 8 in his test scores.
Wow.
On everything. And the principal told me, and Luke Love gave me an award for just having concern, you know, care.
Wow.
You know, and really seeing what the child needs. They're not acting out because they're mentally ill. They're emotionally distorted because of something that's outside that's affecting them. And
yeah.
That's what I saw. Yeah.
Wow.
Conflict resolution is very important because we have too many homicides and unsolved homicides, and most of these teenagers, they feel like they're not going to be around until they're 30. They don't even think about 20s or 30s. They think something down.
They could die any day.
Exactly.
Wow.
So conflict resolution should be taught from kindergarten on through high school, and the parent council should come up with a way that they can have a support from members of the family or whomever the guardians are of those students. And that would start, you know, towards some of the violence, because too many of young men are killing and getting killed and carrying guns, and parents are emotionally disturbed and bringing blood out in front of them. Excellent students, you know, I've witnessed this recently since I've been in homelessness and transition myself. But it's a reality. And we can't even, every day, it's more people on this planet than African American, but that's the most that you see that's killing each other or entering each other outside of the school. So what do you think the children are going to bring into the school? So they need to learn. The schools are institutions for learning, and institutions for learning and developing and growing. And we have to be responsible as adults to reach out to the others, other people in the community. I was talking to Maika Bellows about something that Dr. Bellows taught me. He said that we should always look out for the health interests, rights, and needs of the people. And once we do that, look out for the health interests, rights and needs of the people, then we can start developing precinct councils. And now we have parent councils. And why can't that same, you know, rule apply to the schools? Because all our students are exposed to that, especially of our ethnicity. That's my opinion. You know, a parent is fearful to walk to the corner, and then it hasn't been resolved who did the homicide to a family member or family members, and the anger and the hate is spurring. You know, it's developing. It's still, you know, being cut off, and it's mostly our people that's doing it to each other. You know, people are doing those crimes everywhere, all races. But it's too much among us, hate crimes and, you know, injuries. And that's because we're not caring enough, not just because of us, but because of humanity and pragmatic. And it needs to be addressed, and I'm willing, in spite of what I'm going to help in developing, like you said, block by block. And if we do it in the institute where our roots are, our young, I know that it would sort of be a resolve, you know, because a lot of the parents and guardians who are suffering from mental anguish and bringing those anxieties in front of the child, and then the child, you know, they can't focus because they don't witness back in the home violence. You know, and then it's a burden because they know, especially among the homeless children, and it's a reality. One of my smartest students was homeless. The family was homeless, but they weren't living on the street. They weren't living in a shelter, and a lot of the shelters that do have school-age children, they have busing to school, but they're restricted even to social, you know, normal social doings, because once they're in the shelter, they have a bus to take to school, and they come back, and then they're locked up in a little room, and it's not like homesteading. So we have to, you know, build that support, and I think conflict resolution with parent involvement or guardian involvement is the best way to start with our youth. Mm. And it also the adults.
Now, you mentioned also, Rashida, you also mentioned homeless children that they might necessarily live on the street or in a shelter, but maybe they're, you know, living on somebody's back porch or, you know, in somebody's garage or in somebody's basement. How do you tell when those
children are maybe homeless or how, what are some, I mean, some of the signs, like you said, the clothing, not being able to be washed, not being able to have good hygiene, and then, of course, they get teased for that, you know, got a smell and all of that. But are there ways you can tell if somebody is maybe in a homeless situation where maybe their family is crowded into somebody else's house or living out of a car, you know, those kind of things? Is it the same kind of signs that you would look for?
Well, actually, you can tell most times with the aggression of the child. But now what we had developed, we're developing the parent council. We had a form, and they would acknowledge, you know, that they were living with someone else or something like that. So there's a form. I don't know what it is.
Now, how do we be shamed when they reveal things like that, the fact that they're homeless or, you know, living in a car or something like that? How do we keep them from feeling like they're going to be publicly shamed or ridiculed or laughed at if they reveal that?
Well, actually, they reveal it in their behavior. They don't, you know, just be set aside as that most of them rebuild in their behavior and aggression, and then some of them in their apparel, you know, that dress or body stuff. But they have a parent council, and they have a document to find out whether you're living with someone or you're living independently in your own home. That's the only way that I know. But I had an out-of-school summer program, and it was designed with all the homeless youth, starting from 5 years old up to 13, summer program. And that's how I knew. And then I went and involved myself in volunteering in the school that was in the area where I had the sanctuary, they call it, for some, and they excelled, though. Only thing I did was got books from the schools, I mean, from the Board of Education with testing, and then gave them lunch and took them to my little aquariums and stuff like that, activities. But that's how I found out. But most of the time, they have demonstrated, you know, and changing behavior. I'm just curious about this one little boy, a friend of mine's grandson, his mother and her boyfriend, not his father, lived together. And she, the mother, was very aggressive and stabbed the boyfriend that's living with the grandmother. And the child is an excellent student. Very smart. I mean, they talking about putting him into a higher grade. But this is the mental anguish that he's witnessing. And he knows that he's sleeping with his grandmother, or he knows that he's sleeping in a chair on the floor, and then knows that his mother and his father, but his mother's boyfriend is living there. So that's going to keep his focus off of what God gave him naturally, intelligence. And he's very smart, but these other things that he's seeing and his homelessness, you know.
Wow.
And I just moved myself out of it because I'm too emotionally involved, and I just let them come to me and vent their little emotions, you know. But that's pretty bad. And then the police came and it didn't take nobody to jail. But then the boyfriend is homeless, and the mother is homeless, and the child is homeless, and the grandparent is sick, and there's stress on that child.
Well, you know, one last question before I go to our last break. So, Rashida, you see these things, and it is stressful when it becomes known by authorities that people are living in these conditions. What is the response? Are people just ignored? Are there social services, or are social services creating more stress because then you might lose your children to Department of Children and Family Services and end up in foster care because you don't have money? I mean, what is the
It's kept hidden. They move around in the community like normal people. It's kept hidden. Unless someone reports it, and then if someone reports it, then it brings problems, more problems, because then DCFS and all of them get involved. So if we could just focus on organizing the precinct councils and getting into the schools so that we can get reach out into the home and have some participation in conflict resolution. Because it's stressful if you don't know where you're going to sleep or how you're going to cook your child a meal because you don't even have a stove. And then living where a child don't even have a bed and you don't have a bed. And then you try to have a relationship that brings more conflict and other injuries sustained. So we have to go into the institutions and start there. You know, because that's what those institutions are designed for, supposed to be, for learning and growth.
Absolutely. For sharing all of your insight. We're going to take one last break and then bring another caller into this conversation. 312-671, you're next. And anybody on our switchboard, if you got a comment, please press 1 so we know you have something to say. And, of course, you've been listening to Rashida from Chicago. Rashida Ali has been an advocate for the downtrodden for so long. And, of course, we'll even talk further about maybe some of your own personal stresses and how people can be of help, because we are our brothers and sisters' keeper. So we'll be right back after this last break, and we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Viata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Everything you need, what your body needs, is found in nature. So Susan Essentials doesn't do it any other way. Susan Essentials provides your employees and individuals access to over 20,000 nutritional products, and they are shipped direct to your door. Because Susan Essentials is certified in plant-based healing, we're permitted to offer you the best nutritional supplements on the planet. They're non-GMO and sustainably produced. And we take the guesswork out for you. Let Susan Essentials help you take control of your health today.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
And we are back, listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. We've been talking about how we can turn youth violence into youth excellence. Well, it means we gotta be like a champ team. We have to get together and help and be supportive. So, Rashida, before I take this next caller, you mentioned that you've gone through some challenges with homelessness and you know, having to perhaps deal with the city and other administrators and people who might not really be set up to be helpful. So what would you suggest that people do if they want to be of assistance to somebody who's going through a challenging situation? What's the best way to help?
Well, first of all, most people, that since I've gone through transition recently, I think it's for purpose because I really know how it really is to be homeless now. I think... Ask that question again, because I'm sort of thinking something.
You know, a lot of times people might be in a state where they just, you know, they look up and something happened to the place they were staying. Maybe, you know, it burnt down or the owner lost it from taxes or something. And next thing they know, their place is no longer available, and they're literally out on the street. How does the person, first of all, reach out to friends and family? And what if you don't live in a city where you have any friends and family? Are there any kind of agencies or any, you know, religious institutions or places that actually do help when somebody's in a crisis situation and don't have a place to lay their head?
Well, it appears to me that nonprofit groups who are reaching out are the only one that's branching out into the community, because the federal and the city workers are working from home, and you can't go to those public places, the offices, and get the assistance, not since the pandemic. So it's even more pressure. So and then the people in your environment, people sort of have the tendency to think it's a karma, and it's something that you did to cause it. They can't think outside of the box in the situation, and they don't be helpful. They be more oppressive and injured instead of, you know, like the old school, everyone help each other. But instead, it's a judgment. They put a judgment. Oh, well, she or he is less than, she or he did something to cause the problem that they're in, instead of just actually acknowledging that there is a problem and how could they assist you in with the burden. Like Dr. Bevels and Dr. Price said, we have to think about the health, interests, rights, and needs of the people. And everybody needs a roof over their head. That's real. And then in our communities, I don't care, even some of the best communities are federally foreclosed houses, and people are becoming more homeless, but less talk on it. The only thing they're doing now is just driving by, especially for those who have mental issues. And I know that homelessness can cause a mental disturbance in a human being because of the pressure and anxiety and neglect. So we need to, first of all, once we discover that someone has that need, is find out what can we do to address their health interests, rights, and their needs so that we could help them instead of judging, because that's the first thing that, or they misjudge or look down because of the what they think a homeless person is. Because when you go down to Chinatown, you see the people in the small houses and all the garbage around them and the smell, they think that that's homeless. That's not homeless. That's somebody who has a mental problem, because nobody in their right mind would want to sleep on the cold ground in the snow with garbage and in the summertime bugs and things flying around. And then the same thing when a person is living in someone else's home, overcrowdedness and all the other stresses would make them not know how to resolve conflict, you know, because that's confusing. And it is a conflict when a person is thrown out of their house, especially if it's wrongfully done. And then there's no a family or friend support. So that brings other anxiety. You have to have strong faith and belief in who you are and be motivated to move forward instead of getting stuck into that little syndrome. And most people get stuck because they don't have the assistance. And now it's even worse. And then it's more pressure on those who are impoverished, you know. And that's why we have such a high crime rate. You know, drive by an 8-month-old baby getting killed. What could that baby do to cause that on he or she? You know, what could they have done? They're only been on the planet 8 months, 3 months, getting shot.
Right.
It's about ethnicity. The other people are doing heinous crime. You know, other races, they're killing too. But not like we're
that's
killing each other.
Not racist. That's true. It's a problem. But now you mentioned the people who are homeless that, you know, living in garbage and things like that, might be, you know, filthy, haven't washed, haven't combed the hair, and that's indicative of a mental illness, because usually, you know, a person of sound mind, they'll find a way to clean up some kind of way, even have to go in a gas station bathroom or something. But as you say, people judge people who are homeless like, what did you do wrong? As opposed to, oh, well, how can I help? So do you think that, why do you think family members are hesitant to help another family member that might have lost their place to stay? Is it because maybe their household is too unstable? Maybe they're in conflict? Maybe they're, you know, fighting all the time, and they don't want to bring somebody into that? What do you think are some of the reasons why family members don't help family members that have lost their place to stay?
Because of misjudgment and because of what they used to say in the old school, the big eyes and the little U's. You know, you left them, you were and you're not, and so therefore it's something that you did to cause it. And so you're less than me, because I have and you have not. That kind of mentality is mostly among the impoverished and African Americans. So yeah, we can go to community house, or we can go to the HUD abandoned house and make a trap house and survive. But when it comes to the team, when it comes to those who are in their developmental state, homelessness is really a disability. They would give a person SSI if they go to Social Security and say, I'm homeless. homelessness is a developmental disability. Developmental. Just because I have a plight and I run into hardship, or someone chooses to throw me out of their place, doesn't mean that I'm less than. But it enables you to develop it, to grow, to proceed, even if you had business, to move forward. So homelessness is considered a developmental disability.
Wow. By yeah, I guess it
law.
Is.
By state law. Because
wow.
I used to work with the developmental disabled children. I used to do the IEP for the state. And the state law, if anybody wants to Google it, ask, is homelessness a developmental disability? And you can go to Social Security and get money if you're homeless. But you have to have an address. But
well,
you're telling me you're homeless.
Okay, that's a problem. If you're homeless, you don't have an address. That's why you're homeless. So would you have to use somebody's address or get somebody to let you use their address? You know, how does that work?
Yes. Well, it used to be that you couldn't get public aid if you say you're homeless. But you can get Social Security if you say you're homeless because it's a federal rule.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you gotta have a place to send the money, unless you can have a bank account set up where they can just, but then you can't even open a bank account unless you have a house, and unless you use your old address that you had before you were homeless. So it's kind of a vicious cycle where once you lose your house, it's hard to get back into a place to stay unless you have a hand up. Well, let me open the mic for 312-671. I believe we've got Minister Plump on the line joining us today. Grand Rising, thank you so much, Minister Robert Floyd Plump, for joining us on this Saturday morning. So what are your observations? Do you think we could teach a way of life where we actually encourage people to look out for each other and not look down on the less fortunate, and even teach this in the classrooms and school? What do you think?
Hallelujah. Weyon Yashalom, Grand Rising. Weyon Yashalom. We don't die, we multiply. Black is blessed and beautiful, and all about success breeds success. I'm so glad, as they say. And I sing the song music way. Rashida and Sister Naima, that we got King 23. You know, I always say that you all are on, and thank God for the female solution. You all are on in a positive way, a good way, and a better way for helping the people. And I have the honor and the privilege and the blessing to announce at this point that Harold Washington and Rashida know we help people. We help homeless people. We help the veterans. You understand? See, so we got to get on with the real deal. We got the 100, the Harold Washington Foundation 100 year centennial anniversary. And I am personally inviting you, Rashida Ali, which is, and I commend her. She is one of the strongest sisters I know, as well as you can tell. She's intelligent, you understand? And I'm inviting her. We got a special day coming up, which is February the 23rd. And we are organizing people and money. We are inviting the whole community to participate in Black Community Unity Day, so we can iron out the wrinkles that's in our shirts and pants. We can be a part of the solution on February the 23rd of 2022. This is the year for you. See, deuces is wild. See what I mean? Right. This is 222. So we're going to be honoring and remembering Dr. Webb Evans. Okay, buy Black. Invest into Black. Not only invest into Black, give back. and love black. See, the greatest is in my name. My name, Plump, capital P-L-U-M-P, means peace, love, unity, marketing people. We are going to be marketing Rashida Ali in terms of helping her because she needed it. She done helped everybody else. Many people, especially the homeless children at the Harold Washington Elementary School that she introduced me to, because I didn't even know that there was a Harold Washington Elementary School.
I didn't know it was there either.
Yes, and I'm so glad that I introduced Rashida and Mama D and some other brothers and sisters to the Female Solution so we can get on with remembering Dr. Webb Evans and the 100-year, and I need you all to work with me on a special committee to celebrate the 100-year centennial concerning the Honorable Mayor Harold Washington. He would be 100 years. April the 15th.
Yes.
So we're going to start.
I was just coming out of college when he got elected. Yeah, I was like 20-something. Okay. Yeah, so you're right. We're going to launch
everything according to Dr. Webb Evans' departure. You know, I used to tell him and everybody in the organization, which was the American Progressive Association, that he was a 23, and so are we. We are the people. So this coming Sunday, which is tomorrow, we're going to be at 4655 South Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, room 203, and we need to do a community collaboration and education. And for more information, brothers and sisters, can go to the HarroldWashingtonFoundation.net or call Minister Plump at 312-671-2773. We're going to focus on the solution. And a part of the major solution is hiring 100% of our people and always helping people, sharing people, knowing that we need one another. I am that I am my brother's keeper, and I am my sister's keeper. So you all are all welcome to come on out. Rashida is the executive secretary of the Harold Washington Foundation. The way you be a part of the solution is to be, and the way you get the solution is to first admit that we got a problem. Yes, we as a people got a problem. Robbing, stealing, and killing, and looting and hijacking. The Harold Washington Foundation is not in about any of that. We got the music from Mayor Harold Washington campaign. We got the music that came with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., you know, and I'm so glad that, as they say, trouble don't last always. I'm going to be quiet, but I'm going to leave you with this. I'm so glad that trouble don't last always. You know, I'm so glad that trouble don't last always. Singing glory, glory, hallelujah. Trouble don't last always. And I love you. So come on, let's do what we got to do. Talk is cheap. His action speaks louder than words. Your brother,
absolutely,
Minister Robert Floyd Plump, is serving you. Because Dr. King said, we all can be great if we just serve. And if we serve and help one another, then we'll be about the solution for all our brothers and our sisters.
Absolutely.
In love. Thank you.
Well, we thank you, Minister Plump. We definitely thank you for what you have shared with all of us and all the work you've done over the years, and certainly, and we thank you, Sister Rashida, for all of your diligence in keeping us informed and also inspiring us to get involved and make a difference. We all, like Minister Plum said, we can all be great if we all serve, and that is really why we're here on planet Earth, to serve each other. And so when we see a need, we have to get involved. We have to be part of somebody's team, whether it's the block where you live, the church or the mosque that you attend, or the school where your children go. Somewhere you need to be on a team. You need to be somewhere being a part of a group that's supporting each other, because that's why we're here. And when we do that, we will see the world change. We will see the children no longer angry and violent, like Rashida told us. You can see it in the behavior. When someone is aggressive and angry and hurtful, it's because they're being hurt. So rather than throw them in jail and hurt them some more, we need to ask them, how can I help? And that's how we change the world. Well, I'm Naima Latif, and I thank you all for being with us on this Saturday afternoon.
Thank you.
Look forward. Yes, well, we appreciate you, Rashida. Keep doing what you're doing. We'll talk further. We'll call and we'll set up something so that we can make sure you're in a house, because somebody's looking for somebody that can be in their house, even if it's to help to take care of a senior or somebody. But there's a roof over your head and a warm bed to sleep.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimahlatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, medasi. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, geret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.